Hello everyone, I'm making this video to respond to Dean Esme's video, which was also a response to my previous video, which was also a response to MRA mission statement or whatever. The appropriate videos are in the description box for the previous video I respond to, and the current video I'm responding to, Dean's video, is also in the description box of this video. Which I believe is titled Moderation Within the Men's Rights Movement. Now, this is going to be short, or as short as possible. I'm going to try to address some of the points that he made as quickly as I can, because, just because I don't have a lot of time, and honestly, I'm exhausted, but I'm going to try to respond to as many points as possible. If you hear cars passing in the background, it's just because I'm parked outside, and I wanted to come outside and enjoy the sun, so... If your car is passing by, just excuse that and try to bear with me. Now, to the points made in the video, Dean expressed, I'm going to try to get to as many points as possible. If I miss some, you know, I'll address them in a comment session or whatever. He expressed two major points, one of which was the need to be able to say as a men's rights activist that we should have some kind of mission statement, not necessarily, and he specified, not necessarily a manifesto of sorts, but just some kind of general agreement, mission of intent, statement of intent for the men's rights movement that MRAs and whatever can sign on to and agree to. This is what him and Willie Bumblebee are trying to put together right now. And in terms of that, my opinion on that is simply that I think that the men's rights movement has done a pretty exceptional job in a pretty effective job in conveying what it is that we're trying to achieve. I don't know if a document of that sort is necessary, because specifically if anybody looking at it with a reasonable, unbiased view will come to the conclusion upon assessing men's rights and the manosphere in general, but more so men's rights specifically, that what we want is 100%, eventually 100% equality under the law between men and women. That really should be the only core principle expressed by the men's rights movement that everybody generally agrees to. What we run the risk of with making some sort of mission statement or some kind of doctrinal document, you know, and I do want to stress, Dean did not say that any of this is compulsory or anything like that, but I think what we come very close to by hammering out some kind of mission, you know, some kind of statement of intent, is squeezing in certain stipulations and conditions that maybe many MRAs might not agree with. Now, one of the big, I guess, points of contention with the last video that Willie Bumblebee did, and now also Dean referenced in his video, was inclusivity. And specifically what was talked about in Dean's video was the fact that he wants to be able to say that if somebody says, you know, we don't want gay people in the men's rights movement, that he wants to be able to say, look, you know, you don't represent the men's rights movement. That's not what we represent. And that's not, you know, we welcome any person who is actively speaking out against feminism. We don't really care what their sexual orientation is. On that, I agree, you know, and I have no problem with gay people in the MRM. What becomes an issue and what becomes something that people are concerned and hesitant about is the way that and this is an indictment of gay MRAs at all, or gay people. I don't blame any individual gay person for this, but what people worry about sometimes is when we talk about inclusivity, specifically in regards to the gay rights movement, you know, we are concerned that a lot of times what the gay rights movement does, And it's my belief, and I'm of the opinion that the gay rights movement is essentially a cousin of the feminist movement. It's not really, in my opinion, seeking equality for people regardless of their sexual orientation. What it wants to do, what it really wants to do, is insinuate itself and interject itself into various other movements. I call this phenomenon movement creep, movement infiltration. And we've seen this with the feminist movement in regards to gaming culture and the Atheism Plus community. These are one of these, the gay rights movement, in my opinion, not gay people, the gay rights movement. These are one of the specialties it has in that it is more concerned, in my honest opinion, with extracting the approval of other movements, essentially demanding a tithe of some sort from all other movements and getting people to accept their movement instead of securing equality under the law between heterosexual and gay people. It's more about victimhood. It's more about demanding that other movements accept that they are essentially a victim class that deserves more protections than others and is inherently oppressed by the ruling class, which in the gay rights movement cases is, you know, the heteronormative, you know, cis males or whatever. It's basically, there's a lot of reflections and similarities between feminism and the gay rights movement. And I think that one of the concerns that men's rights activists have is that in kind of adopting a supposedly pro-gay stance, and I don't mean pro-gay individual or pro-gay MRA. When I say pro-gay, I simply mean welcoming them with no preferential treatment, just like women. No preferential treatment. You're welcome to be in the men's movement. You're welcome to express your opinions, but you're not going to be, you know, showered with affection or attention or extra special behaviors or accommodations because you're gay or a woman or whatever. In adopting a pro gay rights movement stance, we don't want their issues and objectives to kind of bleed into our movement. And we specifically don't want it to become a situation where they have any authority over the progression and objectives of the men's movement. What do I mean by that? I've talked about in previous videos how there will eventually be a conflict of interest between the MRA and the GRA, gay rights activists, so to speak. One of the major tenets or objectives of the gay rights movement is that of gay marriage. Well, one of the major tenets, in my opinion, for the men's rights movement is the complete separation of government and marriage. We no longer want the government to be able to define in any capacity what it means to be married. We want two people, no matter what their sexual orientation or gender, to be able to get together and say, we're going to build our own customs, traditions, and cultural meanings for what marriage is, and we'll back that up with contractual law. We don't need the government to tell us what marriage is or isn't in terms of things like who gets to visit. If you're in a coma, who gets to visit you, you know, family members and so on and so forth. I think that a better idea than to say that, OK, we now recognize same sex marriages as legitimate. And now, you know, if you have a same sex partner, they should be able to visit you in the hospital in the event of your untimely death or coma or whatever, and you know, this is the person that's going to inherit your belongings and stuff like that. All of that can be settled outside of the scope of governmental mediated marriage, governmental authority providing what marriage means to us. We can do away with all of that. And the conflict that arises between the gay rights activists and the men's rights activists eventually, if you extrapolate, is that if you're an MRA who wants the government to have no authority over marriage because of the mess that is created, because of the countless suicides of heterosexual men, for example, that have resulted from government having the authority to say, okay, this is how we're going to dictate the terms of divorce. In the event of divorce, you're going to give up all your money, your house, your children to the woman, and essentially you're going to be forced to live on your own, pay your own bills, pay your own defense, take care of the kids, not get to see them, be deprived access to them, so on and so forth, until, well, unfortunately, it ends in suicide or it ends in poverty, depression, health problems, prostate cancer, etc. All of these things stem from the government being able to dictate what happens in the event of the divorce. And then by virtue of that, they are also able to dictate what happens in the event of marriage. We want to vest no more authority in the government defining the cultural norms and legal norms of marriage. So if I'm an MRA that says, I don't want the government to dictate to me what marriage is. And somebody is a gay rights activist who says, we want the government now to be able to extend the definition of marriage according to them, meaning I want to keep the authority in their hands, the state's hands, to define marriage and what it is. Now we're running counterintuitive to each other's goals. And that's not because the MRA hates gay people, and that's not because the gay rights activists hates MRAs, but it's simple eventualities and conflicts of interest that are going to occur within our two movements. That's why I'm suspicious of the gay rights movement, because I don't want them to have... Their stated goal is to extend government's ability to define marriage, which is what got us in the problems we're in the first place, in many of the problems we're in the first place. So this is where I say that, for example, not accepting somebody because the individual is gay or is a female or what have you is wrong, that we shouldn't do that within the men's movement, that we should include everybody. That's my definition of inclusivity. Never saying to somebody, just because you're gay, you're not an MRA, you can't be an MRA. That is patently wrong and patently not what I think the men's rights movement should tolerate, right? Okay, I'm perfectly fine with some, you know, with kind of a manosphere-wide understanding that this is wrong to do. I'm not okay with this kind of, I don't know if you'd call it a cozying up to the gay rights movement, because quite frankly, I don't trust them. And I see many similarities between the gay rights movement and feminism, and I just don't see them having the best interests of all men at heart. Particularly, I see them particularly hostile to some heterosexual men, and seeing us as kind of the great oppressor of homosexual people. I don't trust the gay rights movement. I never have, and I probably never will. As far as gay MRAs go, I have no problem with that at all. But I am not trying to cozy up to any kind of movement, especially one that has so many similarities to feminism. So that's my stance on that. In terms of, Dean made a point about critical mass and how we're going to achieve it. And he made a point that, you know, I said in my last video that the men's rights movement hasn't changed any significant laws on the federal level. When I say significant, that isn't to say or imply that the men's rights activists have made no progress. I think that he's confusing what I meant there. What I meant to say, or what I meant to convey, is that we haven't made any progress that's significant enough for MRAs to be telling other people within the manosphere how to act, how to sound, how to, you know, any of that kind of censorship business, what to not talk about in order to not sound misogynistic. I think a lot of attention is placed on the videos that me and people like Stardust make when it's referring to the inherent nature of women, the inherent nature of men, because, well, you know, nobody wants to hear that, okay, because you're a woman, you have certain, you're more likely to have certain traits and express things in a certain way and view things in a certain way. Nobody wants to hear that, and I understand that, but these realities exist, and I believe that, you know, the phenomena that we've categorized and defined, hypergamy, Breifeld's law, so on and so forth, are real things, oftentimes backed up by scientific study and rigor. But I think that an overemphasis is placed on when me and people like Stardust make these videos, because I've made numerous videos in the past talking about a way forward for political action and you know, options for male birth control. I'll put those videos in the link box as well, so you can see them for yourself. You know, nobody ever talks about when Barbarossa sets out a plan. It was like a 30-minute video. I believe the title was "The Men's Rights Movement: Political Yet Nonpartisan," where I talk at length about how we should, what type of approach we should take. And this isn't doctrinal. I'm not saying that this should be enforced onto anybody, but these are my suggestions. And in that video, I talk about class action lawsuits, where we don't have to bicker with feminists anymore, where we don't have to argue with feminists about whether or not we sound misogynistic, but we attack the actual core legal principles that are enacting and abetting misandry, and allowing it to be infused into our society. For example, bottom line, something that we can attack without having to debate with feminists whether or not it's misogynistic, are things that cannot be said to be anything other than discriminatory against men. I talk about selective service. I talk about the draft and how it's just blatantly, if our major central tenet that doesn't have to be inscribed into some official documentation, but if our major organizing tenet is equality under the law between the two genders, then selective service is something that must go. Why? Because it is blatantly discriminatory against men. It is saying that one group of people, based on their genitalia, are going to have to sign a document that puts their life on the line if need be, if the need ever arises. It is a categorization, a index of the able-bodied men of military age, and not a index of the able-bodied women of military age. And so that is discriminatory against men. Either do away with it or make women sign it. Bottom line, that's something that we can take to the highest court in the land, or as high a court as possible. That's something that we can fund and donate to people regardless of whether or not they are a MRA who, for example, is sympathetic to the gay rights movement, or an MRA that is sympathetic to the traditional conservative bent, or a man going his own way. People can donate to that and agree on that, that if the goal for the men's rights movement is equality under the law, well then, let's donate to this cause, because it's seeking equality under the law. And I've talked, you know, about my school, for example, where locks are placed and only women are given the combination to the bathrooms, and where men don't have these locks on their bathrooms. And the blatant message being sent is that women need protection from men, and that men need protection from nobody. They should just deal with it. They are extending more provisions and safeties for the benefit of women than they are for the benefit of men. That's something that we can take to some, to any kind of federal legislative decree that states that we cannot benefit men or women under the law any more than the other. So this is what I'm talking about. But in terms of but returning to the concept of critical mass, how are we to achieve critical mass when before we're even reaching any sizable portion of the population? Because let's face it, you know, we're not a sizable chunk of the population yet. But before we're even talking about these things, we're talking about cozying up to, you know, being inclusive of all these other movements that have displayed in the past various tendencies towards infiltration of other movements and cannibalization of other movements. We're not even focusing directly on men's issues and men's rights, and we're trying too hard, it seems, almost obsessively so, to prove something to other people, namely feminists. Prove that we're not misogynistic. We should just go straight for the jugular. What is causing these misandric laws to be upheld? Let's go attack them on all sorts of legal levels that we can. We have to raise our own monies to do this. Nobody's going to pay for it. And in doing so, we can't, in order to raise the monies to attack the legal infrastructure in place, in cases where we know we can win, not in cases where, you know, it's we'll never win. For example, we can start with selective service. We're probably not going to gain, for example, the right to have the father to have a financial abortion anytime soon. I don't think that that's going to happen, because let's face it, this society is built to maintain women and children at the expense of men. So I don't think we're going to get that right off the bat, but we have to start with certain significant attacks on the infrastructure that perpetuates misandry in the legal sense. On the highest level, preferably the federal level, and we need to start raising our own monies to do this. And in order to do that, we have to have as many people buying into our ideology, regardless of their side sensibilities and opinions on all things non-related to men's rights. So what we need really in order to achieve critical mass is our ideas to spread organically, meaning that we have to be able to spread our ideas, make our arguments so solid, coherent, and logical that people will essentially spread it themselves into all of the facets of society, all of the present subcultures and countercultures, and even dominant cultures within our society, all on their own. I mean, if you look at a YouTube video, it's not the videos even that are featured on YouTube that get the highest views. It's not the videos that, you know, the videos, for example, that spread the most are the videos that go viral, that, you know, reach critical mass all on their own because people decided to spread it voluntarily. They don't have to agree with everything in the video. They don't even have to like the person making the video. But if it's got some kind of content in it that is so compelling that it catalyzes self-transmission, people will see it. And before they even realize they're spreading it, they've incorporated it. They want to spread it. They want to spread the message. They want people to see what's being said or shown in this video. That's what we need to do. We need to make it so that almost a miasma, a benevolent miasma of men's rights logic is disseminated all on its own organically because people want to disseminate it because the arguments are compelling enough to do so. Waging this kind of constant PR campaign that I'm talking about in previous videos is not going to do it. It will never be good enough. What is going to do it, I think, is people saying, I may not like this guy, but his ideas are so solid that I'm going to incorporate it into my own rhetoric, whether it be, you know, somebody who's gay, kind of incorporating it into his own rhetoric when he talks to his gay peers, or some white supremacist guy. You know, I want people to, in all countercultures, taboo or otherwise, legitimate or otherwise, I want people talking this men's rights message without even branding it as men's rights, so to speak. Let them do it all on their own. Let them look at men's rights, take whatever it is that they find applicable out of it in our general message and transmit that all on their own without even having to label it men's rights, because we're not going to outcompete the feminists in a victimhood Olympics, so to speak. Feminism is something that has the bolstering of, you know, our inherent bias, both men and women, towards women, towards women being seen as victims, men being seen as oppressors, so on and so forth. Men will never look like bigger victims than women, even though in many cases they are. That doesn't matter. We live in a world where perception is reality. It's not going to change because men actually are suffering more than women. Men are still going to be viewed as disposable, but if we make our arguments in a way that they transmit themselves, we do less of the work. They carry themselves. We have to make arguments that are self-transmissible. And to do that, we have to make it so that any person can see our views, and regardless of whether or not they belong to some taboo subculture or not, they have to want to spread it. So we have to focus, I think, on isolated attacks on the legal system that can bear fruit. And we also have to focus on our arguments being so rock solid that whatever unsavory characteristic has are overlooked and incorporated organically into somebody else's rhetoric so that they can go out into their own groups and peer groups and spread them all on their own. And we have to focus less on trying to appear not misogynistic, not, you know, controversial, not abrasive, because that's a never-ending path. It just goes around in circles and circles. We'll be descending down that rabbit hole for God knows how long, and it'll never actually bear any fruit. So these people that are consistently, you know, telling us, oh, no misogyny, okay, well, we've heard you, and we're still going to be accused of being misogynist anyway. So hopefully, I don't know. This is just a quick rant, and I have to get going. Hopefully, Dean, I've addressed a lot of the concerns that you had in your video. If not, we'll discuss them in the comment section of this video or your video. And I'll gladly take a look at this men's rights document that you and Willie Bumblebee are forming. If you can, send it to my inbox. Well, I'll send you a private email. So thanks for listening.